Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
Hey, yeah, you. Did you know that Artcast is on Patreon? Go check out patreon.com/artcast for ways to help out the show and get some sweet perks in return. It could be something small, such as our $1 tier to show your support, or join one of our higher tiers to get a shout out, pick an episode topic, or even be a part of the show as a special guest. Even just sharing our show to your friends goes a long way. Once again, that's patreon.com/artcast. Thanks for helping us, and keep it retro. What's up, Argonauts, and welcome to another Retro Gaming Podcast. This is episode 179 of the Arcast. I am your host, David Gilton, and with me is a man who grabs video games by the sticks, Robert Workman.
Well, you know, when you gotta take control, you gotta take control, and we don't have trackballs, so, you know, sticks.
Yeah, not anymore anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I know, the good old days, but what are you gonna do? But no, today is all about twin stick shooters, and no, we're not just gonna discuss Smash TV and Robotron, although those will come up. We are gonna discuss also modern games that take advantage of the format and just kind of our favorites in general, what makes it work so well. And we actually have a great expert on our show that knows all about twin stick shooters because he's kind of working on his own, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. So with us is Will Lewis of Rose City Games, who is the developer of Cat Lady. So how's it going there, Will?
Hello, going well.
So we figured that we would have you on to talk about twin stick shooters, or like multi-directional shooters is also like another term for them, I suppose. since you are working on your own game, as Robert mentioned, Cat Lady. So can you like mention like a little bit about like what Cat Lady is, as well as the upcoming release for it on Early Access?
So, the short of it is that Cat Lady is a twin stick shooter where you throw cats at ghosts. And we are actually going to go into early access as of this recording. That's next week on Thursday.
Yeah. Now, we actually got to play the game a little while back here at PAX West. And I got to tell you, it was the cat's meow. You know,
it's too easy.
Yeah. Bad kitty. But no, I mean, it's one of those games like you don't imagine using like cats as weapons in an Enter the Gungeon style environment. And plus the art style, you know, the art styles, it's not a typical art style. There's like different shades to each level. There's like one of them was like a light blue. One of them was like a purple. It's almost like black and white with this color hue mixed in. And it's pretty sweet, actually.
Yeah, we really wanted to lean a lot into the cuteness and the art style, make characters that are very identifiable. I don't remember if you had found the meow button when you were playing, but
there's a meow button.
Yeah. Oh my God. Now I need to play this. I'm not even a cat guy. You know, I'm not. So
yeah, well, the game might conform you in that case. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get more into detail about that a little bit later on as we talk more about twin stick shooters and what Cat Lady will bring to the table. But right now, David, it seems like everything's coming up PlayStation these days, isn't it?
Yeah. So there was the big announcement from Sony that the PlayStation 5 is coming out on holiday 2020, which you know, not to brag, but it was something that I did predict some time ago, if you recall from our previous discussions.
Yeah, no, there are only a handful of features. They still didn't confirm backward compatibility yet, but they are talking about like different things they're doing with the new controller, with haptic feedback to replace the rumble technology, and you know, a number of other different features, possible solid state drive, make games run smoother than ever before. And you know, no games have been announced yet. We probably won't even see them until at least summer 2020, unless they do PlayStation Experience December, which is still up in the air. But you know, now they've got like a definitive timetable here, and now it looks like 2020 we're going to see both the Xbox Scarlett and the PlayStation 5 to go up against Nintendo Switch. And Nintendo Switch obviously has a huge lead, and they don't need to worry about evolving just yet anyway.
Now, regarding the controller, though, with the haptic feedback, is that like basically the same type of rumble feature, more or less, as the Switch?
In a way, I think Switch called HD rumble. That's what they called it. Something to like make it feel like, you know, it was a little bit more closer to feedback. And I think that's what they're going for. With haptics, you get like a broader range of feedback so that when you crash into a wall, it actually feels more like a more than like a tackle on the football field, according to the PlayStation blog thing. And it actually has its own adaptive rumble system. So it actually feels like, you know, you're hitting a wall. And not, you know,
like if you get hit on the right, you feel like the right side rumble.
In that case, something like that. So it's something adaptive. I mean, to me, you know, hey, I'm all for that if they can make it work the right way and not like, you know, super shake the controller to the point that it's gonna feels like it's gonna fall apart in my hands.
Right, yeah. So Will, I was kind of curious on what your thoughts are on the PlayStation 5, and I guess what you like hope to see from the console.
I just want some more Dark Souls 2, baby.
Yeah.
Dark Souls 4, Bloodborne 2, or whatever they're on.
Yeah, I guess Dark Souls 4 is not possible because they're like, nah, it's gone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we got to get that that Bloodborne 2. What's the Elden Ring? Is that the new one?
Yeah, with the guy who wrote Game of Thrones, I thought it was. Yeah. Jay, what's his name?
Yeah, or it could be like a Sekiro 2 as well. Like that could be like another franchise that they could go back to.
So we'll die even more. Great.
Yes, we'll die five times for the PlayStation 5. Sure.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
500.
Exactly, yeah. So, Robert, I was kind of curious to yourself, I guess, like with what you hope to see from PlayStation 5 or I guess what you also like predict to see from PlayStation 5.
You know, I think Horizon Zero Dawn 2 is a given. I think it'll be announced because Guerrilla Games has been working on it for the longest time. Because, you know, we've only had one expansion for the original game, so that means they have to be toiling away on the sequel. We know Corey Barlog was talking about a God of War sequel. That probably won't make launch, but sometime after. We'll see like an enhanced version of Spider-Man, because I saw like some early demo reel for it like a few months ago. So, you know, we'll see like a mixture of stuff, you know, sequels and stuff like that. But I was also like being on the Imagine side of things. I think like this is the platform where we need to bring back, you know, Jack and Daxter, Sly Cooper. I threw MotorStorm out there, even though, you know, the team behind it's kind of gone now, sadly, after Onrush. And
both like Insomniac Games now back in like Sony's pocket. I mean, like it seems likely that we'll see more of those franchises come back with the PlayStation 5.
And that's kind of where I brought them up, too. Their next game would be a mystery. We could see Spider-Man 2. We could see another Ratchet and Clank, or fingers crossed, since they have the rights, Sunset Overdrive HD, or not HD, but Super Sunset Overdrive or something like that. And then maybe
Super Sunset Overdrive.
It's possible.
Sunset Overdrive 64.
People would eat it up. If you made a 60 frames per second Sunset Overdrive with a bunch of extra hidden goodies and super skins, hell, imagine if they put a Spider-Man skin or a Ratchet and Clank skin in there. People would buy it up. They'd snap it up, even though it was originally an Xbox exclusive. They would grab it for PlayStation 5, just throwing it out.
Like Tony Hawk all over again in that case. So, yeah.
Sure, why not?
Haptics.
Haptics, exactly. Yeah. So we are excited for the PlayStation 5, and we'll see what happens there. But it's good to know at least like when it's coming out, and it certainly makes sense, certainly for like the holidays, and certainly for like next year. So at least we know like how much longer that the PlayStation 4, I guess, like has life before Sony puts more of their eggs into the PS5 basket, if you will. So. And to kind of keep with the PlayStation love, along with some Nintendo that could, you know, to get thrown in there, there's the Nintendo PlayStation prototype, which is actually going up for sale. So for those of you who don't know, this is the prototype console that Sony was making for Nintendo, which is meant to be basically like a follow-up to the Super Nintendo back in the day. And then like Nintendo decided to pull the plug over like basic proprietary rights, I believe, like with the with like disc basically, because like Sony still had the rights for like the actual discs that were going to be used for the games for this console. So it never saw the light of day. But this prototype did like come out from someone's basement basically. There is Terry Diebold basically is the owner of this console. And he was gracious enough, really, to go around to like several different conventions and like have the console be like, you know, be like shown basically, and I believe also playable at different conventions. I actually personally got to see it myself during the Portland Retro Gaming Expo in 2017, I believe. Yeah. So I met up with Terry there. But now he's, now he's willing to actually part ways with it. So, Will, I'll have you start off the conversation here. How much do you think that this prototype is going to go for?
It's funny. I saw it at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo too, and I remember they I think they just every single item they were joking about it going up for auction next, and of course not. Yeah, man, I have no idea. I can't guess too low without going over, kind of thing.
right. Yeah, it's like Price is Right rules.
It is technically one of a kind, so more than likely, we could see it fetch somewhere around $50,000.
That's what I was thinking too.
Around there. Yeah. I remember seeing it at the Tulsa Gaming Expo before I went to Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and I spoke to Terry about the system and everything, and he was really excited to show it off and all that. But I guess, you know, like he's gotten a lot of mileage out of the system, but he really wants it to go to a place where it'll be appreciated. I think he said he was open to offers, but he doesn't want to just have somebody, you know, who has it and takes advantage of it. He really wants it to go to a good place and everything like that. You know, I made a suggestion to a buddy of mine who runs a museum. It'd be a perfect place to like, you know, display it, let people play it. Cause it is playable. I played Street Fighter 2 on it. Runs pretty well.
It belongs in a museum.
It belongs in, so do you. You get my point. But I think it's going to get some good money up there. The question is, like, how is he going to sell? Is he going to take private offers? I mean, if you try to eBay it, that doesn't guarantee success.
Yeah, I don't think he'll go to eBay personally. Yeah, I mean, like, I think he'll go to, like, either, like, a private, be, like, a private seller or, like, a private buyer, really. Or it should go to like a museum. And honestly, I think it should go to like a museum of some sort, like someone like who will be able to, I don't know, take care of it or be able to like have it be still like displayed for the public to see in some fashion. That's why it was like so good that he was able to like bring this prototype around to like the different conventions and have people check it out. I think in the spirit of that, he should, you know, basically go to like a museum, you know, of some sort or whatever, sell it to them or donate it or whatever he's going to do with it. Although he has every right to sell it really. And still have people be able to like enjoy it, I guess, for years to come.
Yeah. I mean, whatever he gets out of it, I do wish him best of luck. eBay is definitely not the right option. I've learned that from the, Szechuan sauce that I had.
You know that very
ago.
Well. Yes.
It's not a good idea. So yeah, definitely take the private bidding route and, good luck, Terry, and good luck whoever gets their hands on this, because it is a once in a lifetime collectible and not just something that will turn up in a pawn shop in 5 years, I hope.
Yeah. And definitely let us know, like, as far as like, you know, how much you think this is going to go for, because Robert, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as like 50,000. I was thinking in that 5-digit realm, certainly 50,000 and, you know, probably up to like 75,000 if I had to guess. So and we're in that range pretty much. But you know, we'll definitely wait and see. But yeah, definitely let us know what you guys think. And moving on from that, Robert, this was a story that you brought to my attention in regards to the architect for the Atari VCS apparently calling it quits from the project.
Yeah, what it is, they've been working on it, and they said they're just about finished with the hardware design. You know, they're still not working hardware, like, what, 2 years after they funded it on their Indiegogo or Kickstarter or whatever it was. And what happened?
They finished the work on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, they supposedly finished up on it and they were about to enter production, but one of the key architects, Robert Wyatt, who works with the company Tim Giant, he quit mainly because they're owed over 6 months worth of invoices. They have not been paid by Atari. And he says, as a small company, we've been lucky to survive this long. So it sounds like Atari does not know how to manage, you know, the crowdfunding dollars that they made from this. You know, they're still scrambling to find working hardware and they can't even pay the guys who are working on the hardware. I mean, there's all sorts of questions about this already. I think we discussed this previously, the price being around $250, you know, right. having you rely on a streaming service to get most of its games without really announcing any of its own. You know, it's just, this is just another log on the shit fire. to be honest. It's just, you know, it's almost about a raging inferno out of their control. And at this rate, we don't even know if the Atari VCS has a release date. I mean, they say it's finished, but without an architect on the job to really finalize everything, who knows if this is going to be a setback?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this can only be a setback, really, in a lot of ways, even if it's not like a setback on when they plan to release the console, but certainly with other aspects of it. You know, and if, like, the job is largely done, I mean, then that's, like, up to Atari, really, to, like, pay its employees in that case, or, like, you know, pay, you know, to pay the people who actually, like, helped make the product to begin with. So it's just really, really, I don't know, just, like, disappointing. And also familiar, really, for both of us, you know, considering, like, with what happened with, like, you know, with, like, Retro Magazine and with like, Coleco Chameleon and all that stuff. So it's just, you know, it's a little ominous, honestly, for me to see this. And I just really hope that this gets resolved in some way, honestly, because it is very disappointing, like, whenever you have, like, a major company. And I guess, like, with, like, Atari, they're not, like, considered a major company anymore, at least not by, like, the people, like, who are involved with it anyway, you know, even though they're trying to, you know, fix that with the VCS. But you know, it's just kind of disappointing, like, to see regardless. So, Will, I'm just kind of curious on your thoughts with the Atari VCS, and, like, you know, if you have any thoughts also, like, in regards to this breaking news.
I think it's really interesting how Kickstarter funds, you know, how up and down people play that, especially with how transparent people are in the middle of their process. I think that's hard but necessary to do, is stay, you know, on top of the process of sharing where you're on their project and making sure you're actually showing work along the way and everything like that. Because typically, it, you know, with how people are sharing projects in progress right now, it almost feels like something might be wrong if no one's sharing anything. And I think, I don't know, a company like Atari might not be on the bandwagon for jumping on a lot of these new processes, but you know, maybe it's finished and they just haven't jumped on the bandwagon of sharing things and being a little bit more transparent. But at the same time, there's a huge trend of Kickstarter and similar crowdfunding models not working well because of that not being managed appropriately. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
I think the big thing here is that, like, the route they took, like, asking for all this money and then not really providing anything for it and not providing anything for the people that are actually working on the hardware. That's a killer point. I think that's kind of why I admire what Tommy Tallarico is doing. He's doing things his way with private funding and pacing everything out.
Well, he's had, like, words in regards to the Atari VCS and how Atari has been handling this, really, because, like, this console still has so many question marks around it. And it is supposed to be coming out, like, pretty soon, like, I think as early as this fall or maybe even, like, early 2020, and that would probably be, like, my guess personally as far as, like, when this thing is going to actually see, like, the light of day. It's just that there are, like, so many question marks as far as, like, what, you know, what this console is going to provide, who this console is really even for to begin with, like, as far as, like, its audience. Yeah, I don't know, and, like, this just kind of seems like it's a bit of an ominous sign again. And I will bring up, like, the fact that we've been, like, so close, like, with, like, Retro Magazine and with, like, the Coleco Chameleon, Robert, that, you know, there's just a lot of things I'm seeing similarities to, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll kind of wait and see on that. But yeah, so, like, the next story that we have here, though, is in regards to Bully 2, which was apparently going to come out, but got canceled apparently here. So from, like, the ScreenRant.com article here, it says here, a script for Bully 2 was written by Dan Houser, who was part of Rockstar, and a small team of developers in 2008, 2 years after the game's initial release. After development of the first Red Dead Redemption game was completed, a group of Rockstar New England employees reportedly spent somewhere between a year and 18 months working on Bully's sequel, going as far as to create a small but working build of the title. So Bully is, like, one of those, like, Rockstar games that certainly has, like, its niche audience. It, you know, grew, like, a cult following after the, like, initial game. It's essentially, like, a smaller Grand Theft Auto and, like, a school campus, more or less. And it was pretty great, honestly. Like, I personally love the title myself. But it did seem more and more unlikely that we would ever see, like, a sequel to this, especially with how much of a runaway success that the Grand Theft Auto franchise is and Red Dead Redemption, especially with GTA Online and now Red Dead Online. It's just, like, all those things now. I mean, these are the things that are profitable for Rockstar. So it makes sense that we won't see a Bully 2, but I'm just really curious now as far as like what the sequel is actually going to be all about.
Yeah, I mean, maybe going to a different school, maybe being older and going to college, you know, because that could easily be like one hell of a setting for Bully 2. Be like, oh, well, should I go to this drunk party? I don't know.
Yeah. Could be like kind of like a Porky's or like Animal House kind of thing.
Yeah, I can't see it work. I mean, it won't take the Red Dead. It wouldn't take the Red Dead 2 out and be a prequel because what is he going to get in trouble in grade school?
I mean, that could be an idea. I don't know, but he might get in trouble with some people though.
I think college would work better. I think college, if anything, better, put him in a college setting, and you know, because make him older and not necessarily wiser, probably even dumber. Who knows?
Yeah. But, somehow I got dumber. Yeah.
It is sad that it's not going to see the light of day. At least not yet. You never know in the future. Maybe they'll get around to it. But right now they're focusing on Red Dead 2 for PC, which they did announce for November 5th. Mm-hmm. So obviously they have their hands full with stuff that's more successful. But I mean, eventually they could always come around to it. Because like for the longest time, we thought Max Payne 3 wasn't going to come out. Then Dan Houser announced it. Then it came out for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, PC. And it did really well. I mean, it did really well for the audience.
It did really well in general, but not really well in like Rockstar's eyes, I guess, because right. I think it sold like 4 million units, which would be great for like any game pretty much, but since this is Rockstar and they sell like what, like 100 million plus copies basically of Grand Theft Auto 4 or whatever, I mean, those numbers just aren't worth it for them. Yeah. Honestly, and like that's why you're likely not going to see like a Max Payne 4 like in the near future either.
Yeah. Oh, and I think that's another reason why they probably canceled Bully 2 is like, you know, it was great as a niche title and sold millions of copies, but it didn't break the bank like Grand Theft Auto 5, like Red Dead Redemption 2. You know, they're
and you
they're
can't expect it to either, though. You can't expect it to either. You know?
Not every game is going to sell gangbusters, but they want to find stuff that's guaranteed to be a major hit. I mean, like Red Dead Redemption 2, in its first week, it outsold Red Dead Redemption 1 in its entirety. That's right. The kind of grand slam they want to go for. You know, Grand Theft Auto 5 sold 100 million copies. There's no way in hell Bully 2 could even do a tenth of that.
Well, it's the same reason why you have like Valve like not making Half-Life 3, for example, because they just make bank with Steam, you know.
Totally.
So I mean, it's just not worth it for them to do it, you know, despite the fact that it is highly requested, obviously, for many, many years. You know, obviously, Bully is no Half-Life, but it's kind of like a similar situation where like you do have like this like core audience who like really, really wants to see a sequel, but you know, it's just not worth it to the studio at this time. So like, unless they're able to like maybe like hire out like another studio, like another team or something like that to work on it. But otherwise, for like the core Rockstar team, it's just not worth it to them. Will, I was kind of curious on your history with like Bully and all that.
I don't have much of a history with Bully, but one of the things I'm super interested in is, you know, I think it would make a lot of sense for them to sublicense the IP out or any tech. Like, the thing that I think is kind of funny is that, of course, it's very reasonable that they might have not pursued it for business reasons, but if they didn't, then where did the time go that went into developing and or writing what they did have? Because just trying, the thought running through my mind right now is, what kind of tech would they have developed for Bully that they could have co-opted or cannibalized into Red Dead Redemption 2? I don't know if there would be any based on what the setting is and everything like that.
Probably not.
But it's kind of funny to consider what a Bully 2 and Red Dead Redemption 2 crossover would look like if you think about what tech they used in both of those games, or if any of it was similar, or if they just threw everything from, archived absolutely everything from what they were doing with Bully 2.
So what you're proposing is like teenagers in like the Old West, basically, is like shenanigans that they get up to, like in the Old West.
Yeah, you got a little slingshot action, but they can't use that in Red Dead Redemption 2. You know, any of those kinds of things.
That's true. Yeah, I'm definitely kind of curious, like as far as like, you know, in like a post Red Dead 2 world now. You know, as far as like what like a Bully 2 could possibly look like in that case, like where you have like this like open world where anything goes, like anything can happen pretty much, like, you know, like a lot of things are procedural as far as like how everything works in the back end, but within like a smaller setting, more constrained setting, especially like in a school and everything, I think that could be very interesting. But
yeah, and I wonder if even before Red Dead Redemption 2 they were working on something like that for Bully 2 and decided business-wise this isn't going to sell, but like let's use this huge, expansive landscape system that we developed for Bully 2 and use it in Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, who knows how that all worked out?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, like, because like this was back in 2008, so I imagine like there was like some things that they were testing out when making Bully 2, and they just kind of transitioned like some of that stuff to like their other projects. Yeah. So like it makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. And so like the last story that we want to hit on here too is Doom being played on the unlikeliest platform, a McDonald's cash register. So this was actually done by a 19-year-old named Ryan Edgar, who posted this on Twitter. Basically he got a McDonald's cash register from the local McDonald's that he's near, basically, since they were giving them out, I guess, like they were upgrading their like systems or something. So he was able to get one and basically, like, you know, circumvent like a way to make the original Doom work on it. So it seemed like pretty simple, actually, because like it sounded like he got like a USB drive, basically, that had Z Doom, like, if you know, like the Z Doom file, basically, and put it on that, since like the monitor itself has like a USB port, and just like kind of circumvent it to like work that way, basically. So it seemed to like work pretty well. So you can imagine if you like, you know, go through like the drive through and you're like asking for like fries, and all of a sudden you just see like
this guy going, you're through, gonna wait till I get through this level, sir. Now please park right. The car in slot one.
Right. So, Will, I have to ask you, you know, is this the strangest way to play Doom that you've seen yet?
I don't know. What was the other console that somebody really recently did one in? It was something similar to like a like drink dispenser at a fast food place or something like that.
Or like a Five Guys or something like that. Or
yeah, if you look at that thread and you scroll through, there are a couple of things where people are like, oh, well, what about, you know, this automatic dog feeder, or just like, you know, just anything.
Yeah.
The funny one would be if they did a really gross piece of medical equipment, then you would actually feel like you were there maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's always like how like the like test, I feel like, for like these like people who like want to try like to, I guess, like make games work on like the unlikeliest platforms, and like it's usually Doom that's being used, since, you know, it's like widely used, it's widely copied, it's, you know, it's a very popular game, obviously, so it's kind of become like almost like a meme in this case, like, well, can it run Doom?
You know? So. Right. I think that was one of the first comments on when the playdate was announced, that small kind of like yellow Game Boy looking handheld with the crank on it. It's just like, well, can it run Doom? Who knows?
Exactly.
some lunatic is going to get like Doom running on a speak and spell. At one point.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm down with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome.
And that's going to lead us now to the part of the show called What Are You Playing? We'll get some games you've all been playing or have recently beat. So, Will, with you being our special guest, why don't you tell us what you've been playing?
I just finished Dragon Quest Builders 2. I started the Dragon Quest 11 demo on Switch, and then I've been... my more round-based games have been Smash Brothers and Dicey Dungeons lately.
Okay. So you're a big Dragon Quest fan then, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. When I was younger, I saw Dragon Warrior Monsters at Fred Meyer, and thought like, oh yeah, it looks like Pokemon, I'll try it, and just like, I love it. So since then, Dragon Quest III is one of my favorite RPGs, and all that kind of thing. So I'm really excited to see what 11 does, because most people who are huge fans of Dragon Quest, and lots of people who say, okay, I'll give this one a try, agree that it's great. So excited to keep going with it.
Have you seen that the first three Dragon Quest games are on Switch right now?
Yeah, I was excited when I first heard that, but Squeenix has yet again done a lot of weird things with the art before putting the classics back onto console or Android or anything like that.
I think they're like the mobile ports, right, that they brought
over?
Yeah,
those mobile ports of Chrono Trigger were, like, it almost looked like it was in hexels just because of the way it was rendered.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I saw that like on Twitter. Like, there was like a hardcore fan, I think, who like basically showed like the pixel count, basically, and like how like it was like degraded.
Yeah, and like they just choose weird fonts, so it just every screenshot looks ugly. And this time, they did a new kind of combination, which we haven't seen yet. and the Dragon Quest 1-3 releases for Switch use most of the original backgrounds, which is like finally, but they redrew all of the character sprites so that the resolution is higher, but they don't at all look better. Just like all the lines are really skinny and the facial features are really, they just have really fat faces and everything. It just looks odd. And then the monster sprites are all vector. Doesn't really make a lot of sense. I love looking at that game, and I love Akira Toriyama and everything like that. So it's kind of heartbreaking, but Game Boy Color version of Dragon Quest III is the best one anyways.
I mean, it's kind of like the DS version of Chrono Trigger also. Like, it's just kind of confusing as to why they wouldn't use that version to bring over to the Switch, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, who knows really if it's a rights thing or... Yeah, I do not Maybe. Know.
Yeah, not sure. Robert, what have you been playing?
Oh, what haven't I been playing? Just been so busy this week. Started off my week with Ghostbusters, the video game remastered, which came out last week. Very nicely done. Does not have multiplayer. They're supposedly going to patch it in later, but looks really good for single player, and it is fun to play the game.
Now, did the original game have multiplayer? Like, I don't remember it having that.
Really? It was co-op. It was co-op.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they did not incorporate in this new version, but they said they might patch it in later. Mm-hmm. Nothing's official yet, but they are working on it because I know a few fans were asking about that.
Okay.
And then after that, I finished up my review of Fight and Rage, which originally made its debut on Steam. Now it's available on consoles. Really great beat 'em up. Very stylish in a 16-bit style. Great music. It was actually the work of one man, Sebastian Deva, I think it is. And he did an amazing job with the game. I mean, it does get tough at times, but good brawlers usually do. Mm-hmm. So I got the review up over on adventuresinportaste.com. And then there's Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair. This is the sequel to the original Yooka-Laylee. It is a 2.5D side-scrolling adventure mixed in with a little top-down exploration, kind of like Link's Awakening. What you do is you go through the top-down world to find bees, which have been taken by the evil capital bee. And you basically have to go through these side-scrolling levels, similar in nature to Donkey Kong Country. I really, really, really enjoyed this game. Mm. I thought it was very well done, beautifully designed. Gameplay is excellent. I actually like it more than the original Yooka-Laylee.
I've been hearing that from a lot of people, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it just feels so much better. And then I've also been working on Trine 4, The Nightmare Prince. This is actually a return to form for the Trine series. I call it Trine. And it's an excellent game. Absolutely terrific. Great use of characters and all that stuff. And it's just so much fun. I'm really enjoying it. And the last but not least, I've been working on Grid. This is the reboot to the Codemasters racing series. And they did a really good job kind of like bringing it back to form. It's been a lot of fun in terms of its racing excitement and everything. So definitely recommend that as well. So yeah, busy week for me. And it's not going to slow down anytime soon because Witcher 3 is coming out on Tuesday for Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, the Switcher. Yeah.
And I got Concrete Genie sitting here for PlayStation 4 as well. So busy. Now, David, before we get to what you are playing, let's talk about what you're not playing. Because usually, you know, you talk about Overwatch. You talk about all this time that you're playing Overwatch and everything like that. But Blizzard's kind of been a-hole-ish lately with this whole thing with the Hong Kong player and Blitzchung, I believe his name was.
Blitzchung,
so you actually deleted it after all these weeks of playing. Tell us about that.
So I do sometimes delete Overwatch just because, like, I need to, like, kind of, like, take a break from it and, like, you know, it can kind of suck up a lot of my time. So, you know, I just kind of just to... So I just, like, delete it sometimes to do that for myself. But this time I'm deleting it more, like, with the protesters. Like, a lot of people are kind of protesting against Blizzard in regards to their decision with the Hearthstone player, basically, you know, as far as, like, banning him for a year and also taking him out of the grand finals and, like, taking, like, all of his, you know, all of his winnings and all that stuff because he decided to use the platform that he was on in order to show support for the Hong Kong protesters. So, you know, in like a lot of ways, this guy is a patriot, really. And like, he's doing like what he believes in, despite, the harsh punishment from Blizzard in regards to this. He is still standing by his conviction, you know, his convictions, his words. And, you know, Blizzard right now is like suffering like from a real blowback from fans. A lot of people are saying that they're also deleting like, you know, games from Blizzard, you know, also deleting like the PC like storefront and all that stuff that they have, like everything by the company basically. And it's just, you know, it's a big shitstorm really in a lot of ways. And like, so, you know, I couldn't, like, you know, with all the news that's kind of coming up from it and like me like educating myself on like the story, I couldn't bring myself to play Overwatch, despite the fact that I am, like, you know, I've been excited really for, like, the new, like, you know, with, like, the Halloween skins and, like, you know, stuff that's going on with the holidays with it, basically. Because, like, the holidays are usually, like, the best time for, like, Overwatch with, you know, with, like, the events that they have. But, yeah, I just can't bring myself to support Blizzard at this time with what they're doing. And I do hope that they end up reversing their decision in some way, because otherwise it's pretty damn obvious that they are just bending to the will of the Chinese government. I just can't stand by that. So,
yeah, I mean, it just really is kind of awful. They turn their back on their community, and they even have, like, a mantra that says, like, every voice matters.
Yeah, the statue that's outside of their building. Yeah,
I know. And somebody actually covered it up. Somebody worked at Blizzard covered that up with paper, because obviously they weren't happy with the decision either.
Right, right.
But I just wanted to bring that up real quick, because it's kind of interesting, because you've been playing for the longest time, and now what are you playing instead?
So Judgment, actually. So I've been playing a lot more Judgment.
Oh, yes.
Which is the game that's made by the same studio that made the Yakuza series. Been absolutely loving it. So so I've been chipping away at that. It basically goes into, like, you know, detective gameplay, solving a, like, murder, basically, into now more like political intrigue and political conspiracies and all this stuff. It's pretty cool. Like, I'm definitely liking it a lot, and definitely liking playing as Yagami a lot there too, is like the character you play as. And it's a lot of fun. It's really cool. I did go through, like, the part recently where you play as I think her name is Sayori. She's basically, like, the lawyer who works at the law firm where your character used to work at, where she basically goes to, like, a makeover in order to work undercover at a hostess club, more or less, which is kind of, like, a little disappointing for me, because, like, I love that character, but I feel like that they could have done, like, a lot more with her than just have her, you know, like, the fact that she's a woman, so now we have to have her do, like, the one thing that she can do because she's a woman, whatever, even though she's clearly capable of other things, because you know a bit of her background, you know she's a lawyer. Why not have her use some of those skills instead? So, I don't know, it was just kind of odd, and it was a way for them to, I guess, to kind of, like, throw in the some of the hostess club mechanics, I guess, that they had in the Yakuza series into this game, but in a very small way, and, I don't know, in a very, I guess, kind of wasteful way, in a sense, so... I don't know. I mean, I just want to see more justice for Sayori, I guess, in this game. So, but otherwise, it is a lot of fun. It's a really cool game, and yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it a lot. So, still chipping away. And one game that you could definitely chip away on here is Big Drunk Satanic Massacre, or BDSM for short. This is a Steam code for it. It's time for Take No Prisoners All Out Mayhem, featuring Lou, Satan's beloved son, as he blasts through waves of vile traitors to prevent hell from being overwhelmed by pathetic humans. Rip through the human onslaught with a variety of soul-shredding weapons. So if that sounds like your jam, definitely jump on this. Again, this is a Steam code. The code is N4LBCWXZG8F3043. Again, that's Big Drunk Satanic Massacre on Steam. Enjoy, and if you do redeem that, definitely let us know at ARK Podcast on Twitter.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
And with that, we have the Stage of History, which is a celebration of retro titles that deserve a spot, for better or for worse, in the pantheons of history. So I figure, since we are talking about twin stick shooters in this episode, that we would talk about the one that a lot of people know about, Robotron 2084. So this is a 1982 multi-directional shooter by VidKids. Its main inspirations were the arcade shooter Berserk and the George Orwell novel 1984. It was developed in 6 months by Eugene Jarvis and Larry DeMar. And when looking back at its twin-stick control scheme, Jarvis called the design a contradiction that blends incredible freedom of movement with ease of use. So definitely a very inspiring game, definitely a game that, like, a lot of people have played, and certainly has influenced a lot of games after it. So Will, I have to ask you, have you played Robotron 2084?
I have, actually. There's a lot of arcades in Portland, and I've played it at a couple, but it's really funny. In addition to working on Cat Lady with Rose City Games, I'm also part of a community group here for game developers called the Portland Indie Game Squad. We were showing off a bunch of locally made games at the Maker Faire in Portland the other weekend. And at this Maker Faire, somebody drove up a big van, which the side rolled out, and you could play Robotron, and it was called the Church of Robotron. They referred to it as a mobile training facility, and everything on their website is signed by KRA.
Okay.
So I got to play it actually very, very recently as well, while a drone style soundtrack and cultish kind of mantra was shouted at me. And it was a lot of fun.
Very cool. Very cool. Would you say that Robotron has a lot of influence with Cat Lady?
I think just it as essentially the staple of the genre, like one of the first. It's interesting to be able to look at that and look at a lot of modern twin stick shooters, including Cat Lady, and see where a lot of that comes from, a lot of where the kind of danger and also kind of roguelike elements that come from it. I think that's one thing that is really interesting about Robotron is that the kind of roguelite element of getting a high score or going level by level actually did severely influence how twin stick shooters have been approached since. And definitely something we're working with on Cat Lady.
Sounds good. Robert, have you played much Robotron?
Have I?
I imagine.
This game is just one of those arcade classics I never get tired of. In fact, I think this led the way for twin stick shooters, if I'm not mistaken.
It popularized it for sure, yeah.
Yeah, definitely did something for it, and it was just amazing. And it continues to be amazing, even like in its new iterations. You know, like there was Robotron X on PlayStation, there was Robotron 64 and Nintendo 64. Those were a lot of fun, too. Mm. And the only downside is, like, we really don't see it that much in this generation. We don't see, like, much Robotron, although we did get Midway Arcade Origins on Xbox 360. It's backward compatible to Xbox One, yeah. So you can play it that way. So
I have that one too, actually. Yeah.
But we need like something like, you know, where we get re-release again on like Switch, you know, or a PlayStation 4 or something that would work, you know?
Total Carnage!
And that's going to lead us now to Obscura.
Yeah, and for Obscura, I didn't want to necessarily do Smash TV because it's popular. And I know we'll talk about its popularity in a little bit here. But I do want to talk about its follow-up, and that's Total Carnage. This is a game that originally released
in... Don't you mean Total Carnage?
Total Carnage! Well, I'm sorry, I'm not Tim Kitzrow. But Total Carnage, yeah, it came out originally arcade in 1992, but it also found a home release a year later on Super Nintendo, ended up some later Midway compilations as well. Including Arcade Origins, by the way. It's really cool. It's like this top-down shooter, but instead of taking place during a game show, it's basically just like two heroes. You got Captain Carnage and Major Mayhem as they battle against the evil General Akboob. I'm not kidding. That's his name. He's an evil Middle Eastern dictator, Akboob, because he's a boob, I guess.
When you see like the cutscenes, though, like he's basically saying that his country comes in peace or whatever, but they'll like defend if they have to or whatever, but like they don't understand him, so they attack him anyway.
Yeah, so. I mean, the game featured like an army of mutants. He was attempting to build an army of mutants in Baby's Milk Factory. That's the name of his factory, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
This game tried to be so off the wall that it kind of missed the point a little bit, but it was fun to play with two players, you know. And one really cool thing is like when you stepped on a landmine and everything and you blow up, you actually, your character flew more towards the screen as they kind of came apart, which was kind of cool.
Cool, like gory effects, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think the game was as well received as Smash TV. I think at the time people, you know, it kind of came off as like a top-down Contra in a way. But yeah. I mean,
it kind of reminds me of like Ikari Warriors a lot, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, Ikari Warriors was... I don't think it was like a twin stick shooter. I think it was like a single stick shooter where you aimed by turning it around and everything.
Yeah, it wasn't like a twin stick shooter or anything, but like just like with its, you know, with it more like open nature and you're going like up constantly, you know, and like, you know, you have like army guys, whatever. So it's just like more like, you know, Smash TV, but like mixed with like Ikari Warriors type of gameplay, you know, without the twin stick shooter aspect.
Yeah. Merch was like that too. So I think the problem is like, people were more interested in the Smash TV style format and they just didn't get into this. In fact, also, this didn't really meet like the manufacturing target that Midway was going for because of its lack of popularity. It did not get over 2,000 units ordered. So as a result, it was kind of more of a niche title. But I mean, you know, in the end, it did turn out to be pretty well. You know, it got its own legacy. People still remember the game and everything. And Mark Turmel, who worked on the game, was, you know, not really motivated by the lack of sales, so he worked on something completely different for his next project. And that next project was NBA Jam.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was rather cool myself, but not as cool as, like, the Contra games. But still kind of fun. I mean, how often do you face somebody named Akboob? You
know? That's true.
does he look kind of like MODOK, too? Like, is that the big face boss?
Kind of, yeah. He kind of looks MODOK-ish with the Hulk. If like MODOK and Hulk had a kid, maybe.
There you go.
Like a really, really gross kid. I don't know. Yeah. But Will, have you played this one?
I haven't played this one. I don't think I've seen it recently or in the last couple of years at Retro Gaming Expo either, but now I will be on watch.
Yeah, definitely. What about you there, David? What did you think of it?
I mean, I played like a bit of it for sure. You know, it was definitely like a game that I kind of had to seek out a bit because it is kind of like harder to find than Smash TV. But I mean, like, it's fun enough, but like it does kind of feel like more of the same in a lot of ways as far as like, you know, top down shooters. You know, like obviously this one has more like the twin stick shooter vibe to it, whatever. But the thing with like Smash TV is that like there was like more of a sense of dread and tension, really, because the fact that you were kind of like stuck in these like, you know, big box rooms basically and just getting chased down by like endless enemies. So that's the thing I feel like that Total Carnage kind of like misses out on, I guess. It's just kind of like more of an off the wall kind of like setting to it. But the gameplay was just kind of more of the same, I guess. So I guess that's like where like it missed a mark. But otherwise, you know, I still love the humor in it, like the gory carnage in it and all that stuff. It really brings it up in that sense. But the thing like with like Smash TV though is that like the whole game show aspect of it was what made that interesting. And all, you know, obviously like, you know, with the gameplay was really interesting too, as I mentioned, like with the tension that you feel at being trapped in the room. But the whole game show vibe was what really sold it for me. And like, you know, that's kind of something that this one is unfortunately missing.
Yeah, I mean, it did. I think it deserved maybe a little more exposure, but I think being released so close to Smash TV and at a time when people were looking for something different, you know, it didn't really work out the way it was expected. But like I said, you know, it eventually led to NBA Jam being the next project.
Yeah.
So I don't think it hurt Midway too much. And plus, you know, yeah, you can always get it for Super Nintendo if you really, really want to.
Good luck. You'll need it.
And that's going to lead us now to our main topic, which is celebrating twin stick shooters in history. So I figure we'll get into some early examples of the genre first. So obviously we mentioned Robotron 2084, but there were games before it, as I mentioned with Berserk, which was basically, it was a game that was on Atari as well as various other other platforms at the time. But like, I think the Atari version was like the most popular one, where you basically play as like a guy who's kind of like stranded on like a planet, basically, and you're shooting like killer robots. And there's also like the evil Otto, basically, like the smiley face is coming after you.
Yeah. I hate him.
Yeah. You know, so there was that. And there was also a game called Space Dungeon, which I looked up. Which basically is kind of like, you know, I believe that was like more of like, it was more kind of like a spaceship shooter, but with like the twin stick motif, right, Robert?
Yeah, something like that. And there's also, don't forget, Night Stalker on the Intellivision. That kind of had like a, even though it didn't utilize twin stick, it had sort of like a format in terms of like, you know, how you could shoot enemies around a maze too. Kind of like Berserk, but not, it may have been a little bit different, but I'm thinking in the same wavelength in terms of like something that would fit the format.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And another one too I have to mention is Black Widow, which is where you play as like a spider that's like on a web, basically. So you're trying to shoot like basically the other insects that are like around you, basically. So that's how it uses like the twin stick shooter motif like for that. So it's pretty neat. So Will, what were like some of the earliest twin stick shooters that you personally remember playing?
I think Mercs and Smash TV were two of the earlier ones for me. I had that Jurassic Park game for the Super Nintendo 2, which was like, you know, it wasn't necessarily twin stick, but it was that kind of top down. I think it was eight directional too. I don't remember if it was four or eight directional.
And I had eight directional.
Yeah. I had some weird like Buzz Lightyear Game Boy Color game that was like that too. I don't even remember what
was
called. Yeah. But like,
I gotta find that.
Seriously. But also looking at games, you know, even shoot 'em ups that were kind of, you know, along the same lines, like 1942 and even kind of how Gauntlet plays, like the NES Gauntlet 1 and 2, I think lends itself a lot to that. I was, of course, really, really interested in JRPGs and everything like that, and seeing the action elements of like, yep, same perspective, but you're blasting on things was really, really cool. So, yeah.
So when you first played Smash TV, was it the Super Nintendo version or did you ever get to play the arcade version that actually had the twin stick layout?
It's funny because I've played the arcade version more, but I played the Super Nintendo version first.
Gotcha. Okay. Was that kind of like, I guess like I'm kind of curious then like with what your mind was thinking, I guess, with seeing like the two sticks instead of like, you know, a stick and like, you know, a couple of buttons or whatever, like the packs you play.
Right, yeah, I really like that. I mean, now one of my favorites is Nuclear Throne, and I think it's so weird how oddly intuitive it is that blasting forward on two sticks or alternating them or going opposite directions just feels really, really fluid. I actually see when people are playing Cat Lady at expos and stuff like that, when we are introducing somebody to the game who has probably not played a twin stick shooter before, it's interesting to kind of educate people about how to get used to that. A lot of people will flick their stick in the direction that they want to shoot and then take their finger off of the stick. So that they don't have to kind of worry about two things at once. But once you kind of get into that flow, I think it's such a cool genre. So playing Smash TV that way is really, really neat.
I mean, it's pretty obvious, like, when someone is not used to twin stick shooters, really, in that sense, and you do kind of have to, like, split your brain apart in two different ways, but have them work together cohesively in order to make that work.
Yeah, one of the things while working on Cat Lady has just been a huge conversation is just like, yeah, how does it feel good with the camera and where the character is on screen and the trajectory of bullets and everything like that? Like, how do we make that all feel good when you are shooting in one direction and running away in the other? You know, how does kiting work in that way and everything? It's just like such a staple of the genre too. And especially when you're looking at like enemy design to make sure that people can't run away and shoot any of those kinds of things. So yeah, I like how that plays.
Robert, how about you with like twin stick shooter history?
Well, you know what? I think I was first introduced with the concept with Berserk, because that was obviously a great arcade game I played back in the day. But I think the concept of being able to move and shoot in different directions came with stuff like Ikari Warriors, with Heavy Barrel. That was another one that kind of used the multi-directional shooting. And then we started getting the concept of, hey, wait, I don't have to turn this knob and keep walking around like an idiot. So then we started getting stuff like Smash TV. Smash TV was a big one for me. This was a lot of fun to play in the arcades. And then came like the home version of Smash TV, which was still twin stick, but not necessarily twin stick, because it used like the face buttons for your firing direction. And it did really well with that. Like the Super Nintendo version was arcade perfect. It even had like the carnage in it, like people blowing up in it. You know, like this is at a time in which Nintendo was like, oh, everybody sweat in Mortal Kombat, you know, but Super Smash TV, oh yeah, let's explode. Sure.
I mean, that's kind of funny, though, that like Smash TV kind of got under the radar, really, in that sense, as far as like its violence and, you know, just its overall like vibe, really, as far as like being like on a violent game show, you know?
Yeah, I really think the Smash TV was the one that really set the trend. But like you said there, Will, I mean, there are a lot of games these days that are really setting a standard for twin stick shooting, because a lot of people seem to really be embracing the format and making it in their own special way, you know. And I think the easy thing about that is that you can make like an addictive experience and ramp up the difficulty, and people will actually be ready for that difficulty. And one example I like to bring up here is with the developers of Housemarque. Now, lately they've been doing more battle royale games, but before that they've been known for their twin stick shooters. You know, Super Stardust HD comes to mind, which is a really great game on PlayStation 4. But of course, the big one, David, you're probably going to remember this title because you talked to Eugene Jarvis about it, is Nex Machina.
Yes.
Nex Machina is a great example of how to do the perfect kind of twin stick shooter. I mean, it blended the talents of Jarvis with the team at Housemarque, and it was just amazing. And I think the thing that killed me is that it didn't sell, and it kind of forced Housemarque to do something else.
Yeah. I mean, like, and unfortunately, it's like the type of game that doesn't sell a lot, honestly. So yeah, you kind of have to go in already, like, if you're making like a twin stick shooter or a very like arcade like shooter in that sense, that you are only going to sell so many units of it, unless it ends up being like this runaway hit that no one expects, whatever. But in most cases, you're only going to have that hardcore audience who are going to be really into it and who are going to like keep playing it, really, beyond like, you know, the first like weekend or whatever. you know.
And yeah. I think the reason for it now, because of that, I think that kind of taught developers a lesson, like you can't pour a major budget into a twin stick shooter. And right. we've seen a lot of creative alternatives as a result, you know, like Will brought up Nuclear Throne. Another one I like to bring up here is a game that was made basically, but worked incredibly well with its twin stick format. And that's Geometry Wars. This was actually launched as a bonus game, I believe, with Project Gotham Racing 2.
Yeah, I remember it was with like a racing game at first.
Yeah, and then they released it separately. Yeah,
but. Yeah, because that's what I played more of actually than the actual racing game itself, honestly. And then they ended up having it as like its own separate release, which I was really happy about. So yeah,
and then obviously they followed it with sequels. You know, Retro Evolve 2, Geometry Wars 3, Dimensions, and then Galaxies on the Wii, which was surprising. Because it wasn't, you were trying to play a twin stick shooter with a motion controller, and yet it still worked, which I thought it was kind of nutty. You know, I was like, okay, great, sure. I'm just going to hurt my arms here. But yeah, I mean, going back to like, you know, current developers, they're going with stuff that's more budgetable, but still pays loving tribute to the genre. You know, you got like Tesla versus Lovecraft, which I thought was really good. You know, Debris Infinity, which does its best to kind of take the Geometry Wars format and make it its own. It just came out for Xbox One, and it's really good. And then last week I discussed Galaxy Champions TV, which is kind of an ode to Smash TV.
Right.
Top-down closed arena shooter, but it's just really well animated, and it plays real nicely. So we are seeing more and more of these developers who are grasping their ideas and kind of making them their own and really helping the genre live on. Even in like wacky ways, there was this game that came out like last year called Vicious Attack Llama Apocalypse.
Yes,
that's
yes.
the actual name of it, and it's so pretty wild.
Wasn't there like an Atari Jaguar cartridge made for this as well?
For that, I thought it was Total Carnage that got the Atari Jaguar.
Well, I mean, I'm saying like as far as like a modern release of it, but on like Atari Jaguar. Yeah, like a homebrew. Yeah, like I think this came out, or it might have been some other llama based game. I might be. Getting
I think
mixed
you're thinking.
With,
I think you're thinking of that Tempest thing.
I think so. Yeah,
I think that's
what llama homebrews
by
yeah,
llama.
There's
soft.
Our llama homebrews. Yeah,
you got way too many llamas on the brain there, David.
Yeah.
and you know, then you have like Assault Android Cactus, which I'm going to give away a little later here for Steam. That was a fun little top-down shooter with different characters and everything. But of course, this is going to bring back like one of both of our favorite games this generation here, David, and that's Enter the Gungeon.
Hell yeah.
I mean, this is just a game that perfects like twin stick shooting with a storytelling style and freaking bosses from hell. That's what
yeah.
they are.
The bosses, but also the guns too. Like the guns yeah. is what really makes that game. And also the fact it's a roguelike too, which is really interesting. Because I feel like with like the twin stick shooter mechanics, you can really pair that up with like a lot of different like things and genres and whatever, to really put like a fresh spin on it. And like, I feel like with Enter the Gungeon, it really kind of perfected that whole idea of every time you play, it's something different, but you're still stuck in like an enclosed area, basically having to fight off whatever that you're stuck in the room with, basically. And it kept ramping up the difficulty. It kept having new weapons that you can unlock, new items that you can unlock. A lot of them are pop culture infused as well, which was really near and dear to my heart. Like, you know, having like the Ghostbusters Proton Pack, for example, or like the Dead Space gun, and like yeah. Earthworm Jim gun is in there. Like, there's a lot of like really, really cool guns in there. So,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing there. And by the way, I found that llama game you were talking about, Jaguar. That's Jeff Minter Classics, because it comes with Llamatron 2112 and Revenge
yeah.
of the Mutant Camels.
That's the one. Yeah.
I don't know if either of those are twin stick shooters, but they're probably a lot of fun.
There could be like a cousin to that game, yeah, in that case. So.
But it just seems like, you know, these days developers are doing their own little twists on twin stick shooters and keeping them alive, and it's kind of cool. And you know, over the years I'd like to think some retro developers were doing that as well. I don't suppose either of you remember the home adaptation of True Lies.
Yes. Yeah, because we talked about this actually during our LJN episode.
Yeah, it was a standout game compared to all the other shit they did. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was like actually like a good game, like based on like a movie license, you know. And yeah, it was, you know, it's like a lot of fun. It was really cool. It had Tom Arnold in it. Yep. You know, so you can't go wrong there.
Sure.
Will, I don't know if you played True Lies at all, or
I haven't. No, I hadn't done that one.
Okay, yeah, it's on Super Nintendo, I know, and yeah, I mean, you basically just play as Arnold Schwarzenegger, just like shooting at people and like dinner parties, and like you know, and like having to like
kill everybody,
know, to, like avoid. Well, you have to avoid like the like civilians or whatever, and Tom Arnold like yells at you about shooting like the taxpayers.
Oh right, right. So just shoot the bad guys. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. It was really cool.
And then it's kind of funny. We over the past couple episodes, we had like Emilio Lopez, and we had like a couple different people from Contra Rogue Corp. Which actually takes the Contra formula and makes it a twin stick shooter as well. Which, you know, so it just seems like even Konami's doing the twin stick shooter thing. And we just talked about like how Total Carnage didn't work as a twin stick shooter, and yet Rogue Corp does. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I figure we'll get into like a little bit too as far as like the elements of the twin stick shooter like genre, I guess. That we love basically. So Will, can you like tell us like as far as like what it is about like twin stick shooters that you love?
I think that, being able to focus on different areas where you're moving and where you're shooting is can create a lot of really, really interesting situations with dodging unique enemies and approaching different guns and approaching different, environmental hazards, everything like that. I get real bad about it sometimes where I too often like to jump into danger, but I think Twin Sticks allow you to do that and feel good about it in a lot of cases. When things are telegraphed well and you're able to more often than not keep track of a lot of things on screen, I think it's just super, super satisfying to weave between bullets and hazardous areas and upgrade your avatar to either choose to make that easier or to back off and kite things easier or to just kind of like make weird stuff happen. I mean, I think Binding of Isaac is a really, really great example of how you can stack a lot of upgrades and just make crazy things happen. So I really like that stuff. Once I kind of took a step back and learned a little bit more about like Metal Slug, for example, I remember seeing in an art book how they talked about very purposefully making sure that bullets from enemies were flashing and slow so that you could dodge them. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And eventually got it down to where I could beat Metal Slug 1 on 1/4 kind of thing. Cause I was like, yeah, it feels good to like go forward as fast as you can, but also not get hit. Cause if you get hit once, you die. So,
well, it helps for you too, as a game developer, to like kind of like take those tips, I guess, for like the visual indicators as far as like what you want players to look out for or what you want their eye to be drawn to, for example. And certainly having like the flashing bullets and having them be like slow enough for you to kind of like dodge them, it just makes for a more like enjoyable and fair experience, I guess, in that case.
I was super, super excited at PAX West a couple weeks ago. Somebody had a GDQ shirt on and was playing Cat Lady, and I said, hey, do you know about speedruns, or do you just like watching games done quick or anything like that? And he was just like, oh yeah, I was the runner for Kirby 64 last summer. And he said, like, yeah, actually, you know what, I really like how you can keep track of everything on screen in Cat Lady really well because of the colors. And I was just like, oh, thank God, because we spent so much time thinking about that stuff. and then of course his big feedback was, I wish I could skip the text faster and all that kind of stuff, because you know he's a speedrunner,
of course.
But totally, it's really rewarding to have paid attention to that stuff and be able to integrate it into something that we're working on. But I also think that's just something about the genre that I really, really like, is being able to feel satisfied weaving in between all of this information that is either going to kill you or help you. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, I know for me, like with like twin stick shooters, I mean, it's all about like having that kind of fast paced action, but like mixed with like the tight controls and precision aiming, basically.
Movement being really important.
Movement being snappy with your controls. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, totally. Exactly. So, and also like generally, like if they have like a silly or over the top vibe to them, I mean, like when I saw Cat Lady, like the art certainly grabbed me like at first, like from like the booth, you know? And I mean, like seeing like the like art style for like the Cat Lady herself and like the cats and like all the different cats that you can get with shoot like different types of shots and all that, it really kind of grabbed me in that sense. And like once I started playing it and realizing that's like Enter the Gungeon, I was just like, oh, okay, this game is like really got me in its hooks now. Right. So
yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think a lot of twin stick shooters really take themselves seriously. And I think it's interesting how something like Geometry Wars did so well, and it's a really, really great game. And a lot of people try to up the realism even more on a lot of dual stick shooters. But it's kind of like sometimes it's not necessary if you want to, you know, lean into humor or lean into pop culture, like you're saying with Gungeon. And we kind of took it to the extreme. It was just a result of working with the artist that we were concepting the game with. His style is super, super simple, and he's been developing a lot of different ways to make characters and everything like that for a long time. And it kind of matched up, and we're just like, cool, I guess we're going mega simple, and we wanted to rely on making it cute and funny and a little bit more relatable too. So
yeah, I mean, it's just the whole like concept of you playing as like a girl who uses cats to shoot at enemies. I mean, you know, can't really go wrong with that, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like the art style kind of has to like match that in that case. So it's just really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
So speaking of Cat Lady, then I was kind of curious, like, you know, obviously with like Cat, you know, with Cat Lady being a twin stick shooter itself, what does Cat Lady do in order to bring something new, I guess, to the genre?
One of the things that's really interesting that we've been working on, and a lot of things that I've been hearing from people, is that just kind of making tighter controls and tighter spaces is something that I think works pretty well in something like Binding of Isaac. But if you look at stages in Enter the Gungeon or Nuclear Throne or a lot of other kind of indie twin stick shooters, a lot of the space kind of opens up, and it's a lot easier to kind of hang back and plan your strategy and stuff like that. One of the things that we very, very first led with in Cat Lady was working on this idea of, I guess this is kind of in relation to what you liked about Smash TV with that kind of claustrophobia vibe, mm-hmm. is we were working with the idea of a mansion that you're in, and you're exploring different areas of the mansion, and that enemies are themed with, and enemies and areas are themed with where you're going. And we started with the basement and created kind of small, bite-sized, satisfying experiences where, you fire at some enemies, they fire back at you, you get hit, oops, you dodge here, and you have a lot of bite-sized kind of rooms that you're traveling in. And I think we didn't necessarily intend for that to be one of the huge focuses of the game, but it ended up being something that was really fun, that you're able to jump into a room. And of course, with the different biomes, if you're going into the courtyard of the mansion, of course, stages are a little bit larger because you're in more of a field or a garden or anything like that. But having these kind of bite size, like really high stakes and really high energy moments, and then allowing you to complete that room and move as fast as you'd like right into the next one, I think was kind of important. And something that we're really focusing on, especially thinking about things like backtracking. We designed a big kind of room and floor generation system in the biome that makes it so that you don't have to walk through 8 rooms, have a lot of fun doing so, and then say, oh, the exit is on the opposite side, so I have to walk back through those 8 rooms and not shoot at anything that whole time before I move forward.
Right.
That was something that kind of bothered me with End of the Gungeon, is that there's not a warp room in every room, because it's kind of like, why not? So that I don't have to backtrack.
I mean, you can certainly warp to like different points to actually have like the warps to them, like at any time. But yeah, I totally get what you're coming from as far as like being able to warp to any room. In that case, yeah, for sure.
Right, totally. Any room that you've cleared, I should say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's something that we're really focusing on and we're having a lot of fun with. Of course, we are also really, really focusing on stackable upgrades and that base cats that you can swap out for and recruit are also bringing really, really interesting kind of quote unquote gun styles to the table.
So we should talk about actually, this is like the fact that this game has so many different cats that do so many different things. One thing I do have to mention during like PAX West when I was playing the game is that there was like one cat I really liked where it was more of like a short range sonic boom kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of curious like how many different types of like, you know, cats/guns or cat guns, if you will, that you're planning to have in the game.
we're looking at having 30 in the final game.
Okay.
Yeah. And they have a little bit of a different personalities. They've got there's a couple pop culture references in there. One of the things that we just
Grumpy
really
Cap,
want to
I'm guessing will be in there in some fashion.
Grumpy Cap actually is not a contender, but not we're not quite there yet. We do have Melon Cat actually coming in early access.
Keyboard so, cat you know, maybe or
classic. We have some keyboard upgrades and everything. Yes.
Okay. Is there like a ceiling cat at all or?
Yeah, that one's hard because you can't see the ceiling in the game, so we're kind of just like, it's funny though. We're looking at how to we're refactoring a lot of the kind of upgrades that you can give yourself and like different bullet styles that you use and everything like that. And I was thinking about just like, do I give cats the knife bullet and just call it knife cat? Like, we'll see how that works.
Right. I mean, I can imagine that you would have like some sort of like parody of Garfield as well, and he like occasionally drops like lasagna for like health upgrades or something like that.
Exactly. Oh my god. Yeah, especially with the new this new weird creepy pasta Garfield comics. We'll see where all that goes. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, we know all about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I figure we'll get into like some of our personal favorites as well. So Robert, why don't you start us off with what are some of your personal favorite twin stick shooters?
You know what? Again, I'm going to come back to Smash TV. I think with something like that, it just feels revolutionary. It feels like the game has stakes. You really have to bust your ass to like survive to the later levels and eventually take on the final boss, who is the host, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I thought was really cool.
I love it.
I love it. I like Robotron in its many variations, as we discussed previously. I thought those were really cool variations. Enter the Gungeon, I'll give a shout out to, because I think it's still an amazing indie game and really a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm going to count Berserk in a way, because that's kind of one of the games that kind of put me on the map. But like, okay, I could shoot this way and then I can run this way. Even though it technically wasn't twin stick style controls, it had like a method that kind of inspired twin stick games, I like to think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
I will definitely give that a shout out. So, yeah, I'm definitely in an old school state of mind, but although I do like Assault Android Cactus as well.
Yeah. So like with like Berserk then, did you play more of the arcade version or the Atari version or?
I think I played them equally. I liked them both. You know, I mean, the home version was really cool to kind of have it there without having like, you know, bug people and shit, which is
right. It helps, yeah.
Like I'm screaming out loud at like, you know, the could you leave me alone, you stupid happy face? I need nothing to you. Go away. You
he's
know,
coming for you. So, Will, what are some of your personal favorites?
Even though it's not a twin stick, I really always looked forward to going to the arcade and playing like Strikers 1945. And I think because of getting those like shmup upgrades and stuff like that, it just made me like crave twin sticks more, even though there was kind of like a little bit of a dry spell from what I was seeing in twin sticks. And then of course when indie stuff started coming out, like Nuclear Throne just became one of my favorites. I have looped, and our game designer on Cat Lady has looped twice, so we have a little bit of cred there. And I think as kind of a more general take on twin sticks, Nuclear Throne is definitely one of my favorites. But then I think Hotline Miami is another example of a twin stick that like I think it took the genre and did something so different with it. You know, when I'm talking about with trying to kind of compartmentalize fast gameplay for something like Cat Lady, I think Hotline Miami really compartmentalized planned gameplay with a couple of quick decisions kind of made in between, and the theming of it really fits that too. It's like, you know, if you're about to invade a drug dealer's home, you're gonna have to make some split decisions and have a plan, ideally. You know, that kind of it definitely introduces that heist mentality.
Yeah. I mean, like what Hotline Miami, I feel like did best really is the fact that when you die, you get right back into the action immediately, you know, really? And like, it's like instant, like, okay, I did this wrong. Let me just jump right back in there and try something different or try again. Right. Or maybe the enemy will react differently if I do this or whatever.
Yeah. And at the same time, you always want to take your time, even though you can get back into the action right away, you still sit there and think a little bit. Like that heist mentality added to a game with extremely, or a genre with extremely fast gameplay, I think is like such a smart move. And yeah, I really, really like that game.
There's a very like speedrunners kind of mentality too in that game.
So, yeah, totally. I mean,
obviously you could take it like slow, but like to go through it like quickly is like something that's like inherently in the game. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, some of my favorites would be Smash TV. That was actually my introduction really to like twin stick style shooters. Smash TV, like playing the Super Nintendo version, which I believe is called Super Smash TV. But then like later playing the arcade version and like, you know, just kind of having to wrap my mind again, like around like the twin stick, just kind of like motif of like the cabinet itself and all that, like having to get used to that was very interesting. But I definitely liked it a lot. And then much later playing Geometry Wars and just getting absolutely addicted to that. I remember that was like the only game I was playing for like a long while, really, just trying to get like high scores. And like, you know, obviously since I had like the online like leaderboards and all that stuff, like it was like totally addictive in that sense. So playing that, Hotline Miami is a really good one too. Absolutely was like addicted to that for a long while. But I think personally for me, Enter the Gungeon is like my all-time favorite. I just absolutely love that game. I played it for years and years and years, honestly, like ever since it first came out. And it drew me in because of its art style, because of the sheer amount of guns that are in the game, all the pop culture references in it. And it was just like a lot of fun. And like it was something that, you know, I was playing for a while and then I hit like a ceiling and then I put it down and then came back to it. And then all of a sudden I figured out how to get like better and better in the game until I eventually got to the point where I was able to unlock like all the characters, like since like the last update, and like, you know, having like the gunslinger and then having to fight like the like Lich King with like, it was like the double Lich King and all that, and it was just like absolutely crazy. So it was a lot of fun, like really, really cool game. And there was also like a bunch of like other cool games here from our listeners who also responded with their favorite twin stick shooters. Starting off here with Sly Cooper Gaming, who says Smash TV might be my favorite game ever. Hashtag big money, big prizes. Hashtag I love it. and there's also Darren Peters, who says Twin Caliber for the PS2 was amazing. Now, Twin Caliber was a game I had to look up here because I haven't personally played this, but it kind of takes the twin stick shooter idea, but with a third person perspective, and you're playing as like this cop and a convict, basically trying to fight your way out of a prison. And it's just a very, very unique game in that sense. Like it's still like kind of like, yeah. I mean, like it's still kind of like a twin stick shooter in a sense, but not in the way that you're traditionally used to, I guess, with the, you know, like the over the top kind of like view and all that. Robert, I'm not sure if you played this at all. Like,
it sounds familiar, but I think I might have missed it.
Yeah, I mean, like it's pretty cool. I mean, like it seems like the type of game that would be cool to play through for like, you know, for like a weekend or a day or whatever, and then you kind of grow tired of it or whatever. But it does have like a pretty cool like look and vibe to it, so it's definitely one to check out.
Cool.
There's also Michael Eric Setzer, who says hands down and no question, Robotron 2084 still delivers a brutal battle even after 35 plus years. So yes, it's been that long since that game came out. Steve Jacobs, who mentioned Space Dungeon, that was one of the earlier ones that we mentioned here. Keith Albion, who says Keith Albion Borgel House, who says a fun but forgotten one is Black Widow, which we also mentioned here. Ralph Memolo, who says gotta go with Robotron. I don't know if there were any twin stick shooters before, but it's the first one I remember. You never forget your first, which is so true. Brandon Robinson, who says Smash TV is easily one of the best. Great style and challenge. It seemed like a quarter muncher at first, but with a little practice, you could get pretty good at it. My record is making it to the Twin Snakes on my first credit. Great replayability thanks to the Treasure Room / Pleasure Dome mechanic. The sequel, Total Carnage, was pretty good as well, but in my opinion, they overdid it and it just did not have that hook to keep you interested, which is definitely something that we talked about here during Obscura. So definitely good insight there. Our buddy Ken Kuzmal, who says, love me some Total Carnage. It's a fantastic sequel to Smash TV. It's goofy fun and super gory. I love when you die and one of your eyeballs blasts out of your skull towards the screen.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Fun and addictive. Probably one of the top run-and-gun games I've ever played. Like Mercs on speed. So that might be a good way to describe it really there. So very good there, Ken. Then there's Peter Brosnia, who says, Geometry Wars Retro Evolved 2, which definitely we showed our love here for Geometry Wars. And finally here, Mark Mason, who says, Super Smash TV on SNES was the first and still most memorable one to me. I love the complete and utter chaos, surviving in the nick of time, the hectic and yet super tight gameplay, which you can fully lean in a minute, but will take you many hours to master. And I think that really, you know, defines, I guess, like with why people love these twin stick shooters and like why people love Smash TV, especially, is like, you know, having that kind of like claustrophobic and that's just like the intense, like, you know, moments like where you feel like you're cornered and then like, you know, you might eke yourself out, you know, to like victory to kind of get out of like a tight spot. You just kind of like shoot your way, like, you know, you kind of shoot like a hole of enemies like for yourself, just kind of slip through or something like that. It's just there's nothing else quite like it, really. So thank you, everyone, there for sharing your favorite twin stick shooters. So like a lot of good ones there. And Robert, I believe you have a game code to give away.
Yeah, and while I was talking about Assault Android Cactus, I have a PlayStation 4 game to give, or code to give away, rather. It is a fun game where you can play as different characters as they make their way through a vast space station, taking on bosses and continuously growing waves of robot enemies. This one's a lot of fun, and you can get it on PlayStation 4 right now. Here's the code, 8PKA5NNN. QT4H. That's for Assault Android Cactus on PlayStation 4. And enjoy, and please let us know at twitter.com/arcpodcast if you do redeem that code.
And I just want to give a shout out here to our patrons, Francisco Limas, Mac the Ball, and Mega Daffy. So thank you very much, guys, for helping support the show. And if you too would also like to support the show, you could check us out at patreon.com/arcast, where you can see all the different perks they can sign yourself up for in order to help support the show and get some cool perks along the way. So thank you very much there, guys, for doing that. And Will, where can people go in order to find more information on you as well as Cat Lady?
There's catladygame.com. Rose City Games is our studio, so you can go to rosecitygames.com. And you can find those also as handles on Twitter. And my personal handle is GameWillPDX, as in Portland. Yeah, I think that's about it.
And one more thing before we close out here. I did find one interesting footnote I wanted to share here, and that is, it looks like Adi Shankar, the producer who worked on Castlevania and is working on a Devil May Cry series, he's working with Ubisoft on a new Blood Dragon series. I just put the link there, and we'll include it with our notes as well. It's called Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon vibe. It's unknown if Rex Colt will be returning for this series, although he obviously wouldn't be Blood Dragon without him. But it is pretty cool. It's like Adi Shankar is the go-to guy for making, you know, video games into rad animated shows. Because Castlevania is amazing. And, you know, just seeing Blood Dragon come back to some extent, because I don't think we're going to get a sequel. It is kind of nice to at least see the love for the franchise. I mean, this doesn't have a release date yet, but just knowing it's in production is kind of cool, to be honest.
I mean, as long as we see like laser T-Rexes in some fashion again, then I'm all for it. So. Yep, totally. And if you'd like to follow the ARGcast on Twitter, we are at ARGpodcast. Same thing with Facebook, facebook.com/ARGpodcast. And you can find me on Twitter at TheGuiltyMan.
Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/TheDCD. You can also check my work at a number of sites, including SVG.com, AdventuresInPoorTaste.com, GamePer.com, and MMOGames.com. And please be sure to check out our partner site, Don't Feed the Gamers, at don'tfeedthegamers.com. That is run by our good friend, Leanna Ruppert, where her team gives fan-centric news and reviews in gaming. If you'd like to send us any feedback, opinions, retro games, or topics for us to cover, or anything at all, really, you can email us at argcast@retrozap.com. And be sure to check out retrozap.com for all sorts of other amazing podcasts. It's your home away from home if you're crazy about Star Wars or pop culture in general. There is also us with ARGcast, so be sure to find us on iTunes, subscribe, give us 5 stars, and tell your neighbors. We're also on Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, so there is absolutely no reason to not follow another retro gaming podcast. And that is episode number 179 in the books. Until next time, keep it retro, and watch where you point that cat. Well, yeah, you could just take my head off.
Yeah, we get like PETA involved with this now, yeah?
Seriously.
No cats were harmed.
No cats were harmed.
Oh, okay.
They were tested.
It's good to
cats.
Know.
They were tested.
Yeah, they were all tested.
It's a disclaimer. It's a disclaimer at the beginning of the game right there. So.
She takes care of her cats. They're new. But if any dogs show up, you know, I don't know.
That's game over, man.
There's actually one dog.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, there is.
Oh, man. Talk about things being rough. Yeah.
You just had to.
I'm not allowed to do puns. I'm not. All right, guys. We will see you on episode 180 next week. Take care.
Catch you later.